Kia ora, I'm Maria. I'm Māori and Pākehā.
And I'm Kate, and I'm Iranian Australian.
And you're listening to Being Biracial.
It's the podcast all about navigating the world as a biracial person.
We want to acknowledge that we are recording this podcast on the unceded sovereign lands of the Bunurong and the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Eastern Kulin Nation.
We offer our respect to the elders of these lands, past, present, and those yet to come. And we also acknowledge traditional custodians from the lands wherever this podcast is reaching you.
Today is a bit of a special episode, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really exciting because we had a in real life podcast event and we have the recording for you all.
Bananas, our first ever live podcast you're about to listen to. We held an event at Bluestone Church in association with the Maribyrnong City Council and their Amplify program, and we thought we may as well record it.
Yeah, and it worked.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
And so we know that you guys haven't heard from us for a while. And so we thought it would be a nice opportunity for us to re-enter your ears in preparation for us releasing season two of our podcast very soon.
Re-enter your ears. Just a hot little bonus episode for you guys, just catching up on what we've been up to in the break and, you know, a little bit of a taster of what's to come.
So we hope you enjoy.
Kia ora koutou, everybody. My name is Maria. I am Māori and Pākehā.
And I'm Kate, and I am Iranian Australian.
And normally we host a podcast called Being Biracial, What Do You Know? But tonight we have the pleasure of hosting this wonderful evening.
Yeah, we feel really grateful to Maribyrnong City Council for giving us the space to host one of the events in the Amplify series called Being Biracial. I guess for us, when we created the podcast, obviously we got the pleasure of having lots of discussions about race and identity and family gossip and food in our houses. But we also created it during the pandemic when we couldn't meet and we couldn't be in spaces together. And so it feels really special to get to share space with all of you tonight.
And before we get into this evening, we would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the lands that we are all here on today in person, and that is the Wurundjeri people. So I think it's really important every day to acknowledge the lands that you're on and think about the legacy of how we came to be on these lands as well. It's really, really important because it always was and it always will be Aboriginal land.
And the city of Maribyrnong itself is also on Bunurong and Woiwurrung land. So I just want to acknowledge that too, because we're kind of in, as part of the city of Maribyrnong, doing this event. And I guess for us, particularly as we're, you know, about to have a referendum, I've been thinking a lot about the land that we're on, and last night I didn't think that I was going to listen to a John Farnham song and cry, but I did. So I guess we've been thinking and talking a lot about the voice within our communities, and so I just want to acknowledge that too.
Yep. And as an Indigenous person, not to this country, but to Aotearoa New Zealand, you know, our Indigenous voice in Parliament has been enshrined basically since the jump. So knowing that it isn't the case here, you know, I have a lot of sympathy and empathy in my heart for the Indigenous people here. Yeah. So normally I say that we host a podcast, and do we seem proficient on the mics? I think we do, right? So we kind of had this brainchild during the pandemic that we wanted to start a podcast talking about being mixed race, because we are both mixed race, what do you know? You know, in creating this, we were in a little bubble. We brought people in and we ended up interviewing 23 mixed race people from Melbourne, Australia, New Zealand, a couple of people in England, all over the place. And we were able to talk about how they moved through the world as mixed race people. Lots and lots of family gossip, as Kate mentioned. It's pretty juicy. We love gossip. In creating this podcast, we had a lot of fun. Talking about race can be really, really heavy. And we thought we'd find ways to have a little giggle. We thought we'd find ways to, find out those little bits of commonality that we all had together. We've had a bit of a break since we started creating the podcast. We've been on a break for about a year now, and this is one of the first places that we're all together in community and in physical community as well, because, creating a podcast from the dungeon at Footscray Community Arts Centre or like the spare bedroom at Kate's house, can be quite quite an unusual thing to do, and then we kind of popped it out into the world, but we never really got together like this. So what are we doing tonight, Kate?
Maria and I are going to have a go at doing a live podcast. We're actually recording this. This is the first time we've ever tried to do something like this, I guess. So let's give it a shot. So we're going to have a conversation because, like Maria said, we haven't spoken to you guys about, I guess, where we're at for a year. And a lot has happened. So since we last talked to these wonderful people, you've done something big, which is return to New Zealand. Tell us a little bit about that.
So, we finished up recording back end of last year, and I was coming up on a trip home to New Zealand for the first time in 4 years. So the pandemic really kind of kept me out of the country for a lot of that. I missed a lot of things. I missed my brother's wedding. I missed all of these things, right? And I was super excited to go home. I had been planning it for ages. I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to go. I'm from the bottom of the South Island in New Zealand. It's called, a place called Invercargill. And I was going to drive all around New Zealand and see all of the people that I hadn't seen, all of the family that I hadn't seen in, that 4 years. And I had it all planned out. And then, of course, I got COVID. Merry Christmas to my family. So sorry. And so that kind of, put a stick in it a little bit. But
the dream returned to the fatherland.
Yeah, hello, everybody. So my family Christmas was a bit of a silly one. We went through the McDonald's drive-thru. But one of the things that I had kind of forgotten about New Zealand, right? I was looking at it with rose-tinted glasses, and perhaps if there are any Kiwis in the room, you might feel the same. But, from the outside looking in, New Zealand does seem like a bit of a utopia, right? Like a bit of a post-racial utopia that's like the blueprint for all of this stuff. We have a treaty, we have like a Māori electorate, all of this wonderful stuff in place. So I was kind of looking at the trip with rose-tinted glasses. And when I got home, I was really, those rose-tinted glasses were, like, smashed. They were taken off my face and they were stomped on the ground and they were smashed. And, I had forgotten. I live in a little, I have a little bubble here of, this wonderful community that I create with the podcast and Kate, and all of my friends and all of this stuff. And going home, I sent Kate a little cheeky list, of all of the kind of like homophobic, racist, sexist things that I had heard, like kind of slurs that you hadn't heard since you were like a child, were being said in my hometown, right? And by people around me. And so that was really, really confronting. Like just an example, I'm obviously not going to say any of them, but I heard the N-word, right? We know not to say that. It's 2023. Three times when I was at home. Right, and not just from, one of them was a particularly horrible joke from a white person in a group of predominantly white people. That kind of silenced the room, as it would. And thankfully no one laughed, but also no one said anything. And then the other two, one of them was from my oldest brother, who is not particularly versed. And, he does his job. He has his six children and that's, he's taking care of business. He's surviving, right? So hearing him say that, I was like, Jason, don't say that.
Did you actually say that to him?
Yeah, and then my sister-in-law was like, also Jason, and not his partner, but someone else. And Jason was like, what? I'm black, I can say it. And I was like, actually, you're not, Jason. And then we had to have a little chat through it, right? And, you know, the third one was from one of my oldest friends. And I was in her house, just me and her, and she just casually said it. And I was like, well, I'm going to go now. So nice to see you. Love your cat. Bye. Going to go. You know, because it just feels, it just blindsided me, right? I have spent a lot of time curating this wonderful community and these wonderful bubbles that I live in. And to go home and to be so confronted with, like, the actuality of where I'm from and, you know, some of the people that are in my circles, it was, yeah, pretty disappointing.
How do you think that that has impacted, like, how you feel about home?
I love that you asked me that question in front of all of these people. No. I think it's just a reminder that to take off the rose-tinted glasses, right? Because if I know what to expect, then hopefully I won't be so blindsided by it next time. And I think another thing is that, like, in out of three of those instances, I only said something once, right? One of those times, I was, like, the only brown person at a party. And, you know, so I didn't want to be that girl who brings the party down and gets someone kicked down and... But actually, maybe I do. Maybe I actually do want to be that girl who gets someone kicked out of a party for saying something freaking horrible and, like, that shouldn't be said. Maybe I do want to be that girl.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm kind of surprised that the time that you spoke up was with your brother.
Yeah, that's because I can, like, punch him in the back. You know, you know, like, when you have siblings, you're like, shut the hell up. Like, you know, I could do things to my brothers that I would never do to another human. So, you know, it was a bit of an easy one to be like, you, shut the fuck up, what are you doing, you know? Like, and I felt like it was easiest to have that conversation with him. And then, you know, the other two times I had just felt like, well, I've just had COVID and I want to reserve my energy. And, you know, I think next time I'm just actually not going to do that because I felt like I had to fold parts of myself away in order to be palatable at home, right? And, like, even though we're hosting a podcast about race and, you know, having these wonderful discussions and all of this stuff, like, I'm not the perfect, you know, executor of how to be a human in the world. I still, you know, kind of fumble. And it's disappointing.
I guess, does that also change the way you think about future trips to New Zealand and how you'll spend your time?
Oh, yeah, big time. You know, I kind of am going to limit interactions where I can come into contact, especially with the girl at the party, and, yeah, kind of change a little bit how I'm doing things. And also, I mean, my intention with that trip was to not spend 3 weeks at home where I'm from. My intention was to be travelling and doing all of these things. So I think keeping that at the front of my mind is good. And it wasn't all bad, though, guys. Like, I didn't go home and was, like sick and, you know, feeling, like, blindsided by all of this stuff. I did actually have, like, a really delightful time. I mentioned that my brother got married, which I did miss, but they, him and his wife just had a baby. So I got to meet a squishy little baby. His name is Case. And it's very funny because it's my brother Jason. It's his youngest son. And he has three kids to a Māori woman, and then he got married to his new wife, who is white, and she is Dutch, which is quite a random thing. If you didn't know, in New Zealand, there was kind of like a race to colonise New Zealand, which sounds horrible, right? But so, like, the French and the Dutch and the English were all kind of, like, going for it. And so there's still, like, quite a heavy Dutch presence in New Zealand. And Case, they named their son Case, because Case is a Dutch name, which I think is really, really cool. And it's so funny because my brother Jason, he's darker than I am, like, in his complexion, and his son is so white. Case is so white! And like, he has Jason's face, like, stamped on him, but he just looks like a little teddy bear because he's white. And the other funny thing about Case's name, so it's Dutch, right? That's the main reason why they picked it. But they also picked it because it's the name of a tractor brand. What? And my brother, like, proudly, he's like, yes, it's the name of a tractor brand. Jason, don't say the N-word. Oh, my God.
When you said it's Dutch, I was like, oh, my gosh, they're really considering bringing both parts of their cultural heritage, because I'm assuming, is it Birchmoranga is the surname?
Yes.
What's the surname?
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, oh, look at that. No, tractor brand.
Tractor brand, yeah.
I feel like we're a bit in the, like, baby naming era.
Yes. When you get to your 30s, right, you look around and you're like, everyone's either, like, having babies or buying houses or doing, you know, all of those things. I mean, obviously not me. But I feel like you've been experiencing some
baby naming
consulting.
Yeah, I will. It's actually been really cool because we have had, like, some biracial friends have kids, and then we've had some, like, interracial couples have kids, and so I feel like we have obviously spent all this time during the podcast talking about names and thinking about names and complaining about being called Kate Robinson. Hi Dad, nice to see you. and so, like, it's been kind of fun to then bring that to the discussions with our friends. We want to shout out Kahani. Six months old and already at a being biracial event. Education starts young these days.
We're going to have her on season 3. So she should be able to talk by then, right? Yeah.
But it's actually been super interesting. Like, one of my friends, Grace, she is Indian American, and she really wanted to have a name that would work really well in English, but also, like, kind of brought some of her heritage, and so they picked the name Mira, which is very sweet, easy to spell, like, yep, she nailed it.
Did you get the shortlist?
Well, she was pretty sure from the beginning that it was always going to be Mira, but another friend of mine, who is Persian, and her wife is white, so actually they've, like, created my new best friend, because I keep on talking in the podcast about how, like, I never have met somebody who's half Iranian and half Australian. And so when they were having this baby, I was like, oh my gosh, you're creating one of me, like, whatever. And she was like, this sounds like Twilight. And I was like, I'm not going to be in love with your baby. Don't worry. It's not a Renesmee situation. But what was super interesting is, so she came with all these Persian names and she was like, what do you think? Like, Niloufar, so cute. Noor, so cute. Like, just like, I loved all the list. I was like, you're really nailing it, Fuzz. Like, you've really thought about this so well, and lots of those will work really well in, you know, both languages. And, like, as I got down the list, one of the options was Armani. And Armani, like, is a Persian name, but, like, we just, like, cannot separate Armani from, like, Armani Exchange. Like, I was like, Fuzz, you've got to, like, think about the context. You can't just think about the racial context.
It doesn't just exist in a vacuum, what you name your baby.
Like, Armani, Gucci, Versace. Like, no, what are you thinking? And so we had, and then she didn't actually, the baby was born, all very excited, very sweet. And then they, like, hadn't chosen the name for a really long time. And I was worried that actually they'd chosen the name and she just wasn't telling me. But no, Armani didn't get chosen. So that's available for anyone else. Like, we provide naming consultation services now. Armani is high on the list. But it's actually super interesting, I guess, to have our friends go through the process that we've talked about our parents having gone through. Like, and see how that works in practice. And get to have opinions about it and express those opinions very strongly.
Very tee hee. I'm not a parent, but I'll help you name your child.
A tractor brand.
So we also, yeah, we create a podcast, we you know, run events, but we also are open for consulting on baby names. Yeah, culturally considered baby names. Call us, 1-800 being biracial.
Don't call that number, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I don't know what you're going to get. So we talked about what I've been up to and my semi-disappointing, still hilarious trip home. Tell us what's been going on for Kate Robinson?
I guess, like, since we last spoke, the biggest thing that's happened for me is that Iran has gone through this kind of revolution, I guess. And so the 16th of September is actually the one-year anniversary of the death, murder of Mahsa Amini at the hands of the morality police in Iran that has kind of, like, sparked a movement, the Women Life Freedom Movement. And so I guess that has been front of mind for me, basically, for the last year.
And what does that feel like as part of the diaspora? Like, how do you show up for that?
Yeah, it's been really interesting because when she was murdered, I was overseas. And so I was going to protests in, like, Amsterdam and in Greece. And that was actually really fascinating because I would not be meeting, like, the Persian community in Greece otherwise. And it felt actually quite special because I didn't know what that community would even look like. And actually, it felt really weird coming home because it was, like, kind of throughout all of the papers in Greece and in the Netherlands. And it seemed like it was something that lots and lots of people were talking about. And then when I came back to Australia, I kind of realised we're quite far away. So, like, Greece and Iran are quite close. And so, like, of course what's happening in Iran is maybe more prominent in the news. But, yeah, it just really felt like it wasn't something that lots of people were talking about all the time here. And I don't know if that's just, like, me coming from my perspective where I was thinking about it every day. And so then I was disappointed when everybody wasn't thinking about it every day, which is obviously really unrealistic. But yeah, so that kind of shift was really interesting for me to just kind of grapple with. But then I guess, like, over time, it actually was quite nice because then I don't have a huge link to the Persian community in Melbourne, but it just meant that people were gathering every week at the beginning. There were some of the most beautiful protests I've ever been to. Music was really front and center. And sometimes when, like, I'm walking down Swanston Street at a protest and I kind of, like, can't hear what's happening, like, I don't feel so connected, but there was just, like, something about bringing that to protest that felt really special. And, like, of course, ridiculous things were happening. And then, like, some problematic stuff was happening, which I didn't know how to feel about. Like, one time we were outside the front of the state library and one of the chants is, like, down with the dictator, or, like, down, down, dictator. And then, right, on board in an Iranian context. But then there was, at the same time, an anti-vax protest happening at the same time, and they started walking down Swanston Street, and then they heard us doing, like, down, down with the dictator, and then they started doing it, but, like, in a Dictator Dan context. And I was like, oh, no. And I was like, how do I be, like, no, like, keep on moving along, like, I don't know how to feel about this. I don't know. It makes me feel so icky. And then from their perspective, they're like, yeah, of course we want to get rid of the Islamic regime, but they're not bringing any nuance to it. So there's so many things like that have been kind of weird to have to grapple with. And I am kind of sitting there at the intersection of that. And I don't know if some of the aunties were, like, understanding that these anti-vaxxers, what was going on. And yeah, maybe that's for the better.
But
lots of icky things that you just have to try and navigate.
Okay, so the icky things, we know them and we hate them. We hate them. But tell me about, were there any joyful parts of being in community with the Persian community here?
Yeah, I think, like, in a really lovely way, because people were being really active on social media, and I felt in a really non-performative way, like in a really genuine way. And I kind of know that because so many of the graphics and stuff that I was seeing, I was like, this is so visually unappealing that, like, this is not, like, a cool thing to repost and this is not a cool thing to have on your grid, but, like, I respect it, like, auntie that's created this, like, absolutely.
Using MS Paint.
No, literally. And, like, the colours, I was like, oh, no one's done graphic design. So it didn't feel performative. But I guess people were, so you all of a sudden I just, like, started following on Instagram, like, a million other versions in Melbourne who were sharing different resources. And then you kind of became, like, online friends, which was nice. And, like, so if you're going to a protest alone, like, someone would be like, oh, anyone else going? And then you'd meet up with a stranger. And lots of, like, yeah, mixed-race, interracial families and things like that. So that was really nice. I also had a really funny thing where there's a very cool, like, Persian art activist group that does a bunch of activations in Melbourne. And they were painting a mural of Mahsa Amini that I was helping with at Brunswick Baths. And one of the days I was just, like, there painting. And it's, like, very beautiful man, Reza, was, like, just chatting to me. And then he was like, thank you so much for coming, Kate. It's, like, it's so nice that you're here. And I was like, no worries.
Thanks.
Yeah, I was kind of confused about why he was thanking me. Oh, no, like, it's really important to me to be here, obviously, to support. And he was like, oh, like, how do you even know about what's going on in Iran? And I was like, oh, he thinks I'm white. Like, that's why he's thanking me. And so then I had to be like, Reza, no, actually, like, my mum's Persian, like, I'm half, and, like, do the whole thing. And
not just an ally.
I know.
And it shows up every week. Yeah. Ally.
So funny. I was like outing myself. And then I was like, and so you're not going to thank me if I'm Persian? Great. Like, you only get it. And then we were talking about where he was from, and he's actually from Karaj, which is like kind of like, I would say, Geelong. Outside of like Tehran, big city, but not really. And like my cousin did his like military service there, and I have other cousins that live there. So I was like, yeah, I've been to Karaj. And he was like, what? I am speaking to a girl named Kate Robinson and you're telling me that you have been to Karaj? And I was like, yeah. See me.
And so they would have been talking Farsi around our world. Did you hear anything about you?
No. No, I didn't hear any gossip about me, but then he was like, oh, I was wondering why you were, like, giggling. And I was like, yeah, because, of course, everyone was gossiping, because, of course, a giant mural cannot be painted by, like, the Persian community without there being, like, some issue about whose name goes first and in what order on the thank yous. Also, there was, like, a Kate and a Katie, and I was unsure if there was actually a Katie or they just, some people were calling me Katie and some people were calling me Kate and they didn't realise that I wasn't two different people. So anyway, I'm there twice.
Ally.
yeah.
Just an ally.
but yeah, so he was like, I was wondering why you were laughing. And I was like, yes, I was like listening to you gossiping. Like clearly I was giggling along. That's where my like Farsi is great, like the gossip factor.
And the listening.
Yeah.
They're on the ground.
And the listening factor.
So in between when we recorded and now, you've also had an exhibition as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about your exhibition? Kate sometimes is an artist. Well, no, all the time as an artist. Do you want to tell the people what your exhibition was about?
Yeah, I guess that was quite cool because it was called Zendegi, and it was about kind of one of my Persian aunts, and she kind of shared a bunch of photos of her from pre-1979 Iran, and then I used those photos to create a bunch of paintings and also then displayed some of those photos as well, because I guess for me what was cool is that it kind of shows in Iran that I think that lots of people don't ordinarily see, and it is like a very sparkly, glittery, like mini skirts. Oh yes, this was from the mm-hmm. exhibition. Subtle, as you can tell.
We brought her along.
Yeah, so I guess for me, what was cool about that exhibition or going through that process was that even in naming it, I was like, should I call it a Farsi word or not?
Like it's your baby.
Yeah. Oh my God, Armani. So I guess for me, it was important to even just like, yeah, I'm really comfortable with having a Farsi word be the title of my exhibition. I feel comfortable claiming that and I feel comfortable speaking about it. And yeah, so that was a nice reclaiming process, I guess, for me, myself.
would you have been able to do this like 5 years ago?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Yeah, and I think a lot of the discussion that we've had in the rooms that we've created for the podcast have been the reason, and other people saying that they're comfortable claiming all parts of their identity has been really important to me to be able to take up that space. But then also similarly, while I was just overseas and I saw a play called A Strange Loop, and in that play, the protagonist kind of has multiple versions of himself represented in the cast, and one of them is like his white girl self, and she's really prominent. And sorry, the protagonist is black, and I kind of loved that for him. I was like, yes. And I guess when we like talk about Taylor Swift,
we're going to Taylor Swift. That's me channeling my white girl.
Like, it's kind of beautiful in a way, because I think having conversations about being biracial means that, on the one hand, I'm really comfortable with creating an exhibition about my Persian side. And then, on the other hand, I'm really excited to go to Taylor Swift with you. And that those two things can exist and be complementary. We got tickets. We're really excited, guys.
I had to fight in the pre-sale trenches. I put a meeting in my work calendar. And I spent an obscene amount of money. Nobody asked.
And I guess kind of like, as we're talking about our white girl selves, do you feel like since we created the podcast that the conversation about race has kind of shifted at all?
So I think when we created this, just for a little bit of context for you guys, when we created this, again, it was in lockdown, right? And, you know, so we had a bit of energy. And also it was kind of a hot button topic, you know, around the Black Lives Matter movement. And it was really like at the forefront of a lot of people's minds in a way that it hadn't been before, especially white people, right? And so I think where we're at now is a little bit different. You know, we've had this kind of tidal wave of content come through, like, you know, TV shows, all of this stuff where they're talking about and displaying stories about, you know, all different types of people, you know, whether they're mixed race, whether they're Indigenous Australian, you know, Indian, you know, even thinking about something like Bridgerton, you know. And so I think, you know, in that respect, I'm seeing more and more diverse TV shows, you know, events like this being put on all around. But honestly, it feels kind of like the conversation about the pandemic itself, in that, like, it's perhaps been a little bit discarded, or maybe the way to phrase this is that it perhaps feels like a lot of people might feel like they've solved racism. Like, oh, it's over now. Oh, we've solved it. You know, we see brown people on TV, so it must be solved, right? You know, we've got the cultural diversity training at work. Now we've checked that box, so it must be solved, right? And so, again, it kind of feels like it's shifted from the forefront into this kind of stage of resignation, or, you know, kind of feeling like it's been solved. It feels different, right?
Yeah, I think probably when I ask that question, because I feel like it feels different.
It does. It feels really different.
Yeah, and I don't know if I have, like, yeah, the TV thing and the content thing is really interesting to me, because I can see that stuff would have been created, greenlit 2 years ago. And so that's why now when I watch The Summer I Turned Pretty, the main character is biracial, but it's not talked about. Like, she just is, and I love that for her. It's not about her racial journey in the same way that it is in Never Have I Ever, you know, where that's really central. Yep. She's just, like, biracial on the side.
Just happens to be.
Yeah. Or, like, Shang-Chi, like, because you're a Marvel girl.
I do love Shang-Chi. I'm actually a nerd. do I look cool? I'm not actually that cool. Yeah, I think the needle does feel like it's moved in a peculiar direction.
In a great direction. Like, I want to see Shang-Chi, for sure, obviously. But I guess what I'm interested in, and what I don't have a sense of, is, like, what is getting greenlit now? And is that going to continue? Have we just like moved into a moment where the expectation is, yeah, you're not going to write a book or create a show or something and not think about diverse voices and not think about the fact that, you know, like white people just can't write those voices. Mm. But I just simply don't know.
Well, and again, I feel like it comes back to that point of this perception that it might have been solved or that it's been resolved in some way, like as if racism and all of the things that come along with it, you know, solving that is a fixed point on the horizon. And I think what that kind of brings out in a lot of spaces, and where I see this the most is honestly at my job. So if anybody works at my job, don't tell them. don't tell
Live
them.
Live podcast, Maria.
But I think what that has kind of shifted into is a bit of performative allyship and, you know, cultural diversity as a box-ticking exercise or for optics rather than, you know, actually being the bread and butter of how an organisation is run or how a program is put together or, you know, how a festival is put together or something like that as well, right?
What kind of stuff do they make you do in cultural diversity training?
So there's a few things, right? So there's kind of like yearly things that we have to re-up. And one was kind of initiated. It was called the like a cultural something tool. I can't remember exactly what it was called. The cultural tool was, it was like a word form that was like, do you know which Indigenous land you are on? Great. Where are you from and how do you identify, right? And so I got this form, and it was, again, in the middle of lockdown. I got this form, and they were like, you have to do this as part of your ongoing professional development. And I was like, wonderful. So I looked at it, opened it up, and I'm like, what are these questions? And so I had quite a lot of feedback about that. And they made some changes. A lot of people did have feedback. I was like, okay, this cultural tool really feels like it's for white people more than it's for, you know, people of colour, people who have immigrated to this country, Indigenous people from this country and Indigenous people from other countries, right? And so I really fed that back to them. And what resulted was not a better tool. It was not a better tool, guys. Did you think it was? No. What kind of was the output of that was that the tool was now optional. Oh, good.
For all people?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And there are some more other things in the works at the moment that I think are, you know, are wider happening in my organisation. But again, it just felt reduced to a box-ticking exercise. And then now the kind of professional development or the kind of, you know, mandatory trainings that you need to do around those things, it just feels like, it just feels like they're going, we did it!
Yeah, and I feel like actually part of that for me, now that I've been thinking about it while you've been speaking, is that the language of allyship is like much more available to people. Like, so you are able to like perform wokeness in a way that I feel like maybe before
we weren't able to, or people weren't able
yeah,
to.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's something in that as well.
I definitely think there is, and this perhaps is not necessarily my place to say, but you know, I think one of the things that I'm noticing in relation to that is that, you know, if we're thinking about the voice to parliament stuff that's happening at the moment, I can see the a movement of far right, using that language and the kind of tenets of that language to be like, well, they said that they're going to say no. So we should all say no, right? You know, they're kind of snatching that language and not actually diving any deeper as to why groups of Indigenous people might say no to a voice to Parliament here in Australia, right? And so they're just snatching the headlines of it and then using that bundled with the performative language of allyship to seem like they are actually having good intentions behind what they're doing.
Yeah. And I think I've been in a bit of a, like, reading kick. I reread Crying in H-Mart because it's one of our favourite books. And then I also read Yellow Face, which is like a book that's everywhere at the moment. I feel like I saw it at absolutely every like airport bookshop that I passed through.
Can you give me a little rundown of what Yellow Face is? Because I haven't read, because I simply cannot at the moment. My brain is full. Give us a little rundown.
Yeah, so Yellow Face is, it's really clever. So the author is biracial. The book is basically about, and this is not a spoiler, but because it happens like within one page, but basically the main character is white and is an author and is not that successful, and her best friend is Asian American and is like wildly successful, and she dies and the white girl steals the unpublished manuscript. And then it kind of goes from there. It's so interesting. And so she, kind of the protagonist, it like really does you for a loop, because the protagonist has to kind of like justify how she could have written this book about this Asian American woman's experience. And like she does things like she changes, her name is Juniper Song, but like because her parents are hippies, not because she is Korean. But she like rebrands herself as Juniper Song because she knows that she's going to be criticized otherwise. Anyway, I read that book. Highly recommend. Go away and read it. City of Footscray Library, I think, or the Sun Bookshop, I can't remember. Someone's doing a book club of it this month in the West. So I read that book. And then I also read Disorientation by Elaine Cho. Have you read that? No, you don't. No,
girl, okay. I can't read right now. I've got no thoughts in this brain.
And that was kind of the flipped perspective. And that perspective was instead a Chinese-American woman who basically is doing a PhD, and she is in an East Asian studies department. And I did Asian studies, so like I was like, ooh, there are some deep truths about Asian studies and how those faculties kind of operate and, are run by a lot of white men often. And so she kind of like is in that faculty and kind of grappling with the fact that everyone wants her to study this particular famous Chinese poet. And she's like, he's so boring. But they're like, this is who you must study. Like, you absolutely must. And then there are some twists and turns, but I won't reveal it because no spoilers. But I feel like when I was reading both of those books, what really struck me in this kind of conversation about race moving along is that they were like dealing with the kind of performative allyship really well, and like dealing with those like difficult conversations and the nuances that we feel in our like relationships and our friendships and that kind of stuff. And that's what I really, really, really loved. I pre-prepared. This will be one of the last things we talk about, I think. Like a little quote from the book, because I just thought it like really summed things up well. The context is basically that she has a white boyfriend. He's really into like Japanese translation, great. Both families are meeting for the first time. So Stephen is the white boyfriend, and Ingrid is the Chinese American girlfriend. You two are so brave, Stephen's mother breathed during dessert. I know interracial couples aren't accepted everywhere in this country. She blinked rapidly to ward off any unscripted emotions, clasped Ingrid's hand, then after a minute went on, but your love is stronger than hate. Stephen's father rubbed his wife's back and repeated, so incredibly brave. Ingrid's mother and father raised their eyebrows at each other, leaving an awkward silence on the table, which Ingrid's mother duly filled by declaring, well, you will have very attractive children. This set off a casual conversation about dominant versus recessive genes everyone could at least unanimously agree upon. And I just
love it. Brave. 2023, brave. Brave. That's a question that we talk about with our guests and about their parents, right?
Yeah, I know.
Grandparents.
Yeah, but it like makes me excited to read that kind of stuff, because it just, for me, distills so many things that I think about so beautifully. And like that's what I'm excited about in terms of like the the content that I'm excited to consume in the next few months. It's like stuff like that. Reading books like that made me really excited to think about race kind of again, because as we've discussed, I feel like it's fallen off the agenda a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's about to go back on the agenda because we're going to start recording season two. We're winding up now. We're done for the evening. Is there anything, any last notes from you?
No, just thank you all so much for coming. Thank you to City of Maribyrnong for putting on this event and other events like this. It's such a cool model to kind of give the power of curation and like creating community and space to artists. And yes,
totally.
We're just like...
Allegedly, we're artists.
We're just really grateful to them for the support, basically.
And thank you, everybody, so much for coming along today. You can go home now.